Hello everybody, James here, Storytime with Dutch Mantel, episode 68.5, aka Ask Dutch Anything 12. This is the episode every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern that comes out, where you, the fans, get to ask questions to the Dirty Dutchman himself, the crafty veteran, who I'm going to start referring to more.
I like that, the crafty. Man, I was just a veteran before, but now I'm a crafty veteran. I like that.
Yeah, no, I think it suits, definitely. Before we do, we're going to do very, very quick plugs. I've got two books. Dutch has got two books. You can get them all on Amazon. The links are under the video. You know what the score is. We're on iTunes as well as everywhere else for audio podcasts. Please give us 5 stars or a good rating wherever you can. I have a show with Shane Douglas, Franchise University with Shane Douglas, available on YouTube. Shane Douglas Official, and also all podcast platforms. That also comes out every Tuesday. And as I said, PWTs, Pro Wrestling Tees, we're on there. We don't have anything up there yet, I don't think, but we will have fairly soon, so keep an eye out on that as well. And as I said at the beginning, questionsfordutch@gmail.com. If you want your question answered by the Dirty Dutchman himself, the crafty veteran. And for criminy's sake, so many of you have that, seriously, we can't get to them all. If we had like a 5-hour episode every week, we maybe could, but we're getting 50, 60, 70 questions a week coming in, and we will get through as many of them as we can. And the very first question we're going to refer to, and it might be a bit of a bust, this first question, Dutch. Dan from London, but also we've had this question from several people, is, hi Dutch, as I'm sure you'll know, Al Snow and OVW have a 7-part documentary on Netflix called Wrestlers. Have you watched it? And what are your thoughts on this fly on the wall type documentary on wrestling? Personally, I'm loving it, and I always found Al Snow interesting.
Al Snow is an interesting guy, but I haven't watched any of this show. And you told me that you see an episode or two of it, James?
I have seen every episode now.
Oh, how many has he got out?
7.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm gonna binge watch it. How long is it? 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour?
Yeah, it's less than an hour, for like 45 minutes or something like that. Do you know what? It's really good. And I wouldn't just say that just because I've interviewed Al recently. He didn't even tell me he had a documentary coming out when I spoke with him, or at least maybe I wasn't listening, but I don't think he mentioned it.
They kept that quiet.
Yeah, that just seems to come out of the blue. But do you know what? It's really good. It is really good. It's really in-depth. It's got like it doesn't feel contrived. And I'll tell you what, you watch it all the way through, and just you can feel, for me at least, I can feel the frustration building up inside me on behalf of Al. With everything he's got to deal with all wrestlers want to book their own angles. He's got a boss above him who's the financer, who wants to throw his 2 cents in. He has to deal with a wrestler who's been busted for a drug-related issue in one episode. Just all the little things that I just can't believe that he just doesn't just throw the towel and just go, forget it. It's such a hassle.
Wrestling has issues just like regular businesses do. Unless you own that company outright and you say he has somebody over him, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Well, they're talking out of school because they don't know what it takes to create a following. That's what wrestling does. You create your own fans to follow your own particular brand. And it's like watching a different show. You got to put your little stories together so you're different from everybody else. But I'm going to watch this because I remember Al, when he was first not getting in the business, he'd been in a couple of years maybe, and then he came to WWF, and I made a few tours of Europe with him, and interesting guy. I like Al a lot, and I'm going to watch that show. The name of it is what? Wrestlers?
Wrestlers, yeah. We'll revisit that question once Dutch has watched some episodes, but it is a really good series. I recommend it. It's on Netflix, by the way. Next question, Michael McGee in Iowa. I've been listening to the podcast for quite some time now, and I absolutely love it. A quick question. Did you ever take any professional acting lessons? I've been going back and watching your last WWE run, and you're a natural. Peace and love.
Well, no, I didn't take any professional acting classes. All I did when I was in WWE, they'd give me this interview and I would go and read it, kind of commit it to memory and go out and cut it. But in cutting that interview, I was talking to those people. It's like I was almost talking to them individually. Because I think when you go out and you stand in a ring in front of, and I've done this, this is a trip, 82,000 people in MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, 82,000 people, and Donald Trump was there too. I talk to them like I'm talking to you right now, James, or talking to the people listening. Because if you go out there and you stutter and you do this, but in the We the People gimmick, it was easy for me to talk that. Because whether I believed it or not, it was still, I was kind of getting over that I really believed everything I was saying. That was the beauty of it. And some of it, yes, I did believe it. Some of it, no, I did it because they wanted me to say these things. But I've never taken acting lessons, but I've talked all my life, and that's how I've made it all these years to get to the point I am now. And I appreciate, James, I haven't told you this, but I appreciate you helping me along in this. And I appreciate the fans who seem to enjoy it. Because I enjoy doing this show a lot. And I really like, because I owe everything I got to wrestling fans. If it wasn't for wrestling fans, I'd have had to go out and get a real job. And I would have really hated that. So, and I did a lot of traveling in my time, but I did traveling. I'm like John Moxley now. I did traveling, but later in the day. If it was 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock, get up and go to work, I couldn't do it. I could not do it. Well, I may have had to do it, but I had to. But thanks to wrestling fans and in a business that I love to be in, you know, I've earned a living all these years doing what I like to do. Mm-hmm. But no acting lessons for me.
Next question. Salvatore M. Has Dutch ever spoken carny to a fellow wrestler and said wrestler had no clue what he was talking about? Also, could Dutch say something to James and carny and see if James knows what he just said?
Let me tell you about carny. Carny is, like the name suggests, it comes from the carnival days. And it was supposed to be used on the midway or in one of the side streets of a carnival with a lot of noise going on. And you didn't want people to hear what you said. So you would say it briefly in carny. And it's been so long that I've used carny that I doubt if I could put it together. But I have heard old timers talk carny like it was another language. And you know how carny is done? You know how, James?
Do you know, I sort of know, but I know it's got a lot of izzes in it.
Yeah, you take a word like what, and you go the W, wizot is what, wizot. Say wizot tizam is it. And it's kind of, I don't know how guys talk that, but I could never do it. But see, what I did, instead of doing that, I just whispered in the guy's ear, what time is it? It was a lot more efficient because I have used carny with guys and they look at me like, what? What are you saying? And nobody ever uses it anymore. Just some of the old timers and some of the younger guys use it because they think it's cute. And it was a way of life for wrestlers years ago. But nobody uses it much anymore. And I have used it in like, you want a referee to tell you to go home in a match. He said, gizzo his own. And somebody hearing that, and he said, what'd he say? But, and go home means, like it's the name, the title suggests, is finish your match. Let's go. Just get the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. So, but not hard to speak. It's like anything else. If you want to master it, you got to practice it. And since I haven't practiced it I never really practiced it. I just knew what it was. And somebody would say something to me in carny, I'd go, what the hell is that? Oh, what is Tizan. Oh, I got it. I got it now. But it took me like 30 seconds. By that time, it's the whole question was mute by that point.
Who was the best at talking carny? Who could just like roll it off the tongue?
Used to be an old referee in Atlanta called Charlie Smith. He could roll it off. My mentor, the assassin number one, Tom Ernesto, he could roll it off. But it's been so long, it's a forgotten art, really. If it wasn't ever an art at all, it's just a forgotten language.
Next question, Rich Richardson, Waco, Texas. Mr. Mantell, who was your favorite person to work with in the ring against as a tag team? Thank you both for what you do, we the people. So, who was your favorite person, your opponent as a tag team?
We had on this week Bobby Fulton, and of course his partner's passed away now, Tommy Rogers. Great guys to work with. Great guys. And any of the Armstrongs, Brad Armstrong, any of them, they were just like naturals. You know who else was good to work with? You never had to worry about getting hurt. Is the Samoans. What were their names? Sika and who?
Afa.
What's the other one's name? Afa. You know, to be so big, they were like silk.
Hey, where did you wrestle? I know you've mentioned Afa and Sika beforehand, but what territory were they in when you wrestled them?
Georgia.
Really?
But I didn't work with them much. I mean, they was on a higher plane than me. But even when I got on TV and they were going to beat me or my partner, you never really felt them. You know, and they never, if they wanted to, I mean, they could have ripped me a new behind, but they were very nice and they were laughing all the time, very friendly in the dressing room and very easy to work with. So there was a lot of guys. Dennis Condrey was another one. Bobby Eaton was another one. Lawler was, he's like silk too. You never felt that guy. So, and that's what you wanted with the guy. See, but I didn't mind a guy getting rough with me a little bit because that's the way I worked. You know, I want to know a guy's there. So I would lock up and he would lock up. So I liked it better that way. So it gave me more of a feel of what I had to do. But there was a lot of great guys that, you know, if I really listed them down, I could name guys for 30 minutes that were great to work with.
To stick with Afa and Sika, there's a story that popped in my mind when you mentioned them. And apparently, not to be completely stereotypical here, but like all the Samoans, quite a lot of them apparently had quite bad tempers. And I can't remember who told the story. It's like, but they bicker with each other sometimes. And you knew that the shit was really on when they stopped talking English and started talking Samoan.
Yep.
Have you ever experienced that?
Well, here's another guy that's probably the toughest guy in the business, or one of them, was Haku. But if you work with him, you never felt him. I worked with, I can't remember his name. What was the Barbarian?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sweetheart of a guy, that guy.
This is a story about me and Barbarian. Oh, he is. He's a prince. He really is. We had a match one time, and I don't know what they were thinking, but they wanted me to beat him. Well, he said, okay. But he went into the ring, and brother, he laid on me. You know, he didn't much like the finish. And after he laid on me, I developed a hell of a dislike for it myself. Because I told him in the match, brother, please. He picked me up in the slam, and his hands are right here. But his other hand grabbed me right on my testicular region. God. And I'm up there, and I'm squeezing. I'm looking like I'm having sex with his hand or something. It looked weird. And finally, he threw me off. It didn't hurt me anything. But I remember telling him in the ring, listen, brother, just beat me and let's go home. let's just end it right now. Let's end this misery, and I'll get out. And I'll, if they say something, I didn't tell him all this ring, but I said I got hurt or something, and we just reversed it the other way. But even when they told me that I was going to go over, I thought, wait a minute, what are y'all doing? I even didn't like the finish, and I was winning. So, but he is very, very easy to work with. Now, if you're not working with him, he could be very capable of damn near, you know, making you a cripple. That's how bad he was. And you get I've heard stories of him cleaning whole bars out, because he would get to drinking, and when he got in that mood, he was uncontrollable. But other than that little character flaw, he's a good guy.
Did you ever, with Haku and Barbarian, you ask them both, who's the toughest guy you ever met? And Haku would say, oh, the only guy I was ever afraid of was Barbarian. Then you ask Barbarian, and it's like, the only guy I was ever afraid of was Haku. So they knew what side their bread was buttered. They always picked themselves up there.
That would be a tough choice to figure out who was the toughest. I'd have to go with Haku. I don't know. But they were both tough and easy to work with, both of them.
Next question. Randall Albertini, Ottawa, Canada. During another podcast I listened to, Matt Hardy said his price for a meet and greet is $25,000. I believe that he was talking two-day events. When I see ads for various meet and greets, there are usually 8, 10 or more number of old-time veterans in attendance. I'm sure not many can demand the money that Hardy does, but for an event to have a good significant number of veterans in attendance would cost the person putting on the show a significant dollar outlay. A couple of questions. For those events, does the promoter have to pay the veterans ahead of time and hope to make money on ticket sales? And number two, there seems to be more and more of these. Are they that profitable that the organizations putting on the show always make money?
Well, I can't say they always make money. But this is what they do. If somebody's going to get, and I think Matt Hardy, he may get 25 grand. But if I was going to put one of those meet and greets on, and I want to know what he would need for him to appear, and he sends back $25,000, well, that'd be the last he'd heard of me. I said, no, I'm not doing it, because you could take a bath, a big bath. But what they do is, say Stone Cold Steve Austin. I don't know what he gets. I know about, I guess, 10 years ago, he was getting 20 grand then. But this is what they do. You buy a picture, and he signs it for $100. And it doesn't take that much. How many pictures would it be to make 25 grand, 250?
Yeah. Don't give me the quick maths questions, especially on a podcast. That's high pressure, man.
And I know what Lawler gets. I think his signed photos are very high. And say I go to a convention, you know, I get a fee, but nowhere close to that. I wish I did get that. So, but, and they come and they buy bundles, they buy the books, they buy the pictures, they buy the autograph, then they buy the, you know, the picture. So some of that can total up. If they get all that, that's easily $200.
So explain it to me again then. So you get a fee, right? I presume, do you get a fee up front? Do you get a deposit up front and you're paid later?
You get a deposit, and then you get the rest of it when you get there. Mm-hmm. Before anything is sold, you get your money. Because that's the deal you made. Now, anything he makes over that, the promoter, that's his.
And the promoter provides all of the merchandise, like the 8x10s and stuff like that, yes. And they keep everything else.
Yes. From what I understand, I usually take my books with me. I don't take a lot, but, and that's mine. And he does the meet and greet, the autographs, the snap and goes, and the 8x10s. He provides all that. Plus, he flies me in, he puts me up and feeds me.
All right. Not a bad way to make a, you know, way to spend a weekend.
But, you know, if you're in a big size city like New York or Philadelphia or Baltimore or Atlanta, any of those, Dallas or Chicago, you know, some of those conventions are huge. They're big. And sometimes I hadn't seen people for years, and I'll walk around and there's some guy I hadn't seen since 20 years ago. But the thing is, it may have been 20 years, but still I know him. He's really my brother in the wrestling business. And it's like we never separated. We could sit down and start talking like we never have been apart. And he'll tell you where he's been, how his family's doing, and everything. So, and I enjoy conventions. I actually enjoy the fans more than I enjoy some of the wrestlers, because I couldn't stand about half the wrestling before. But the fans always have different questions, and they're so appreciative. Wrestling fans are the most loyal fans in the world. And I was going to tell you a story, and I forgot it because that happens a lot. But standing in the middle of a ring, giving an interview like I used to do with Zeb Coulter, when I would look out there, I would see America. I would see the plumbers and the mechanics and the painters and the construction guys and the insurance salesman and the car salesman. So what I was looking at was I was looking at America. I'm looking at the same people that makes this country work, and they come out to be entertained. And I learned a long time ago, an old timer told me, and I always remember this. He said, "I don't give a shit if there's 10,000 people out there or 10 people out there. You owe that 10 people the same type of show that you would put on for 10,000. And that's right. They paid their money, and they need to get their money's worth. So, I mean, you won't have the same reaction from 10 people you'll get from 10,000. But still, it really is a moral obligation on the talent's part to provide the best show they can.
How much would you actually pay for Matt Hardy to come to your convention for the weekend?
$30.
There you go. Would you pay me more? Bag of balloons and a pencil, I'll do it.
I'd pay you a lot more.
Okay, then, next one. Back, Brian Kick. Not so much a question, but a radio station out of Philadelphia has a weekly segment every Wednesday called The Worst Song in the World. Pretty self-explanatory, and as a listener submitted. So, and is listener submitted, if I can say that. Stupid. Today, a listener, there's a couple of days ago, named Dan submitted Hulkster in Heaven. I immediately thought of this podcast, and imagine this Dan did too. Very surreal hearing that song on my commute home from work. Keep up the great work. Now, this leads into our next question from David. Hi, guys. Since Dutch has been reviewing unlistenable wrestling music, I'm curious if he can weigh in his opinion on the AWA Wrestle Rock Rumble Rap. So, let me just tee it up 1 second. Okay, and we're back. Here it is. It's quite loud, this, so bear with me. This is the most out-of-time rap you'll ever hear in your entire life.
This is Ken Resnick, and I'm here to say we've got the greatest wrestlers in the AWA. But you're not here to listen to me mumble. Let's fill you in on the Wrestle Rock Rumble. Get on!
Wrestle Rock, be there.
We're the Midnight Rockers, Sean and Marty. We love to wrestle,
and we love to party.
You don't have to worry, we're not gonna fumble, because we'll be shaking through the Wrestle Rock Rumble. Ow!
He sort of brought it back in there. Everyone's out of time, pretty much.
I'm the Sheik, and that's not funny. I got my army and lots of money.
Brody.
If Kanye in my way, I make him crumble. He be sorry, I did the Wrestle Rock Rumble.
That was fairly in time. That wasn't too bad.
Be there.
I'm Jerry Blackwell, I want to see. I want to get my hands on that pencil neck geek.
Jerry Blackwell.
I want to see a fumble. I'm going to make my splash in the Wrestle Rock Rumble.
There you go. You could fart and break that.
You, me, and WrestleRock.
I'm Greg Gagne, and I'm in a rage. I want Brody, and I want him in a cage. A high-flying dropkick will make him see double. I've grind him up at the WrestleRock Rumble. Woo!
Bet you're shitting your pants after Greg Gagne threatened you like
that.
Oh,
my God.
I'm Kurt Hennig.
And Big Scott Hall. Tag team champs, we'll take on them all.
So bring on the Long Riders, those dirtball dumbos.
We'll smear those wusses, do the WrestleRock Rumble.
Yep.
They were in time, they were okay. Obligatory, taking the ladies out to Vegas. Or maybe it was Reno.
This is Vic Bockwinkle, and I've got a passion. I'll get the title back from the humanoid Hanson.
Mr. Bockwinkle.
I've got the brains, and I'm not humble. I'll take the belt back into the WrestleRock Rumble.
He was pretty good, Nick. He was actually in time.
WrestleRock, April 20th, at the Dome.
Who is singing that?
WrestleRock.
No one.
86.
Rapping.
Beaver.
There he is.
Freddie Mercury.
Sergeant Slaughter.
I'm Larry Zbysko. I won't be through till I get done slapping around.
Zbysko.
Gonna beat the ugly bartender into a bundle and laugh all the way doing WrestleRock Rumble. Ow!
This game Doc got a mouth that won't quit, but I'm Scott McGee and want to smack a little shit.
I don't know who that
and
is.
When I'm through, you won't be able to mumble. I'll be left alone doing the WrestleRock Rumble. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one last word from the former champ, Vern, but give it a lot of thought to one
There's
more.
There's Vern himself.
With some old sword to still give me trouble, and I'm starting to get the urge to do the WrestleRock Rumble.
But he's about 80 years old. It took him 80 years to get that verse out.
So there you have it, and now you know him. And on April 20th,
it's Ken Resnick.
At the Dome. So get your
I don't know if you ever met Ken Resnick.
Because you two can be doing the WrestleRock Rumble. Do it!
Do it!
WrestleRock Rumble.
There we go. Right, okay, that's the WrestleRock Rumble. I think we've seen enough. Lord Almighty, what did you make of that?
Tell me not to do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah, you're right.
you've got so much to live for, Dutch. Don't let the WrestleRock Rumble want to kill yourself.
That was pretty bad. So what did they do? That did they sell that? Try to sell that song?
No, it was promoting like a pay-per-view or a big event or something like that.
It was horrible. But they tried hard, so...
That's just... That's so rapped from people who've never listened
now
to it.
Now I can't get it out of my head.
Was there anyone who was any good that you thought?
Zbysko wasn't too bad.
When did Zbysko start doing that the martial arts mastery thing? Because he had like nunchucks and hitting a lemon or something.
I have no idea. Where is Mr. Zbysko now?
He's still golfing in Florida. Last I spoke to him was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he was a good guy. I liked him.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Any other further comments on the WrestleRock Rumble or shall I move on?
No. I mean, now if I had watched that at home, I would go, "What the?" And I would have no comments about it. That's one of the that's a deal you just turn off and get away from.
Did you
and
know,
don't leave a forwarding address in case they follow you.
Wikipedia is the always reliable Wikipedia. I don't know if you can see that. You won't be able to see it. 23,000 people they're claiming for an attendance for the WrestleRock Rumble in the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome.
In where?
Vegas.
I never heard about it.
Maybe 23. I don't know. Hey, that's nearly a dollar. Like every person who went to the WrestleRock Rumble, if that was a dollar per person, you could nearly book Matt Hardy for the weekend.
You could.
Would you want to? Anyway, Brent Mason. Hello, Dutch and James. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and being a Charlotte wrestling fan, one of my favourite things to follow are any new business announcements regarding Ric Flair. They used to make the news. Now I think Charlotte, now North Carolina, has moved on from once proudly being the home of Rick, as we do not hear much about him in the media anymore. Now, my favourite was when Ric Flair Finance opened here, and I actually won a bet that it wouldn't last more than 6 months until we heard Ric Flair Financial had gone under, which it did. About 2 months ago, comedian and podcaster Tony Hinchcliffe announced that he was starting a live podcast from Austin, Texas with Rick called The Goat and the Pony. Since it was announced, I have seen that both tapings of the podcast have been cancelled, which is on par, of course, for Big Rick. Prior to the cancellation, I had very little belief that this podcast would ever come to fruition, as most things Ric Flair business fizzle out prior to conception or soon after they start.
Well, if you want my opinion on it, I think that Rick is kind of difficult to do business with. For me being around him, not a lot, but enough to know. And I do remember when he opened up, what was it, Ric Flair's Credit?
Yeah, it was like Ric Flair Finance. I mean, there was a time like the 2010s, he would lend his name to anything. Like, there was scratch cards with him on and stuff.
And I think with the, that was almost like a pawn shop. Like, you know, Ric Flair Credit, you go in there, you borrow $100 and they'll want 110 back the next week. So that's 10%, but they want it back in a week's time. So the next week it'd be 120. And if you go a third week, it's 130. So eventually you're paying over 100% interest on it. And he had a car lot one time, I think. Had a pawn shop or a loan shop. He had that. Had a window washing.
Did he?
A window washing company, a janitorial service. He had all of it. And all he did is just, they just bought the name and give him some money and just named the company that.
I think it was like energy drink at some point. I might just be making that up, but I got it in my mind he had an energy drink at one point.
Yeah, he probably did.
Yeah. In fairness, he could go all night. He was Broadway, you know. I mean, an energy drink wouldn't actually make sense for Rick. I did some research into Flair some time ago for a future show that we never really got round to. And I found that, and this is off the top of my head, I think he'd invested over the years like into like 10 different Gold's gyms or like buying the franchise. And they all pretty much closed up shop almost immediately. And one of them...
Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, one of them, the big punchline here is that apparently he bought a gym in the Caribbean island of St. Martin, and then a hurricane blew it down, and he didn't even bother buying the insurance.
Hey, there's so many stories about that guy. I would just like to have somebody with some more knowledge of what Rick has done. Why would you buy a gym in St. Martin?
There's war.
Oh my God!
Weirdly, I've actually been, but it's in the middle of nowhere. That place. Well, I just think that's the perfect place for me to invest my money into a gym.
Yeah, because these people are dying to work out down here.
They're not hot and sweaty enough.
How many of those islands have you been to?
Been to 9, and at the end of this year, I'll be 14 in total.
Really?
Yeah.
So you've been to most of them.
Yeah, by the end of the year, I'll have been to at least half, yeah.
You've been to Bermuda?
That's coming the end of the year.
Now that's in the middle of the Atlantic, right?
That's in the middle of nowhere, yeah. That's next to nothing else.
There's no other islands around it, right?
Yeah.
But the Caribbean islands, they start that from Puerto Rico and just slant down toward South America.
I'll be there, Puerto Rico as well, December, whenever it is. December something. Be there for one day.
You'll enjoy
watching my wallet.
you'll enjoy Puerto Rico.
Safio could give me the tour.
He could take you right through the bad part of town, which is right outside the airport, by the way.
Oh, really?
Are you flying in? Or are you taking a
cruise people now? Well, we are.
Well, you're about 10 miles from it when you dock in San Juan. So, but you'll enjoy that. People are nice.
There was another story. Rick
Flair. People are nice if they're not trying to kill you.
Maybe it's like if I have a big false mustache, big hat, poncho, yeah,
and bullwhip.
Bullwhip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll see what kind of reaction I get there.
And talk bad about the people.
Yeah.
See, that's how I got all my heat in Puerto Rico. I didn't talk about my opponents so much. I talked about the people that, you know, they all need to learn to speak English. And if they don't learn, they need to pull all the welfare stamps and all this stuff from them. And I talk about the men are like effeminate and the women are like unpaid call girls. Oh, my God. Then I'd walk down the street and I've said this before. I thought they didn't like my superior wrestling ability till I found out that the hate was coming because they really hated me because I was talking about them. And I refused to speak Spanish because I called it a idioma primitiva, a primitive language. That's what got them. So.
Do we know any other Ric Flair failed business ventures?
He had a car lot. You said that, right?
You said that.
Yeah, he had a car lot. Had a like I said, the loan place, that, and just a bunch of other stuff that people just bought his name. He had nothing to do with it. He just used Ric Flair. If he can get like $5,000 out of a guy, and said, here, take it, use it.
I'm just quickly Googling. Oh, he's got like the CBD oil thing, like that. I think he's got on the Mike Tyson tip as well. Oh, right, let's move on then. We've got a few more questions in this, I'm sure. Rob from somewhere. I was wondering if, I don't think we have, so we'll have to watch it first, but I'll just briefly say, I was wondering if Dutch had seen any of the highlights of this show featuring some of his knockouts, Gail Kim, Awesome Kong, Beautiful People, and Mickey James. This is TNA Impact, episode 1000. You've not seen it, have you?
Well, I've probably seen it. I don't remember it.
It only happened.
Oh, this is 1000. Yeah. This is just... It's 1,000, so okay.
Okay. There's
no, I didn't see it.
No, I didn't either, and I do want to see it, so maybe we could watch it and do a little review. Who knows? Also, this fella says, Rob, does Dutch have any stories or behind-the-scenes stuff about ODB? I thought that she was an awesome talent, although sometimes a bit too comedic and cartoonish. When she was being a powerhouse, though, she was awesome. She always seemed like a great girl in interviews as well with the people.
Yep. Oh, she was good, and she was... she wasn't the knockout type of girl, but she was a kick-ass kind in the ring. And I forgot her first name, but she's a nice girl. You know what she does now, right?
She's got a burger van or something.
Yeah. She runs a food wagon, and she'll pull up somewhere. They have a big convention and everybody know that she used to be a wrestler, so she gets a lot of a business off that. So she's doing pretty well. And ODB is, I had an idea for her one time. Boy, she didn't like it worth a crap. So she told me, I don't like it. I said, well, we won't do it then. By God, if you don't like it, if you're not buying into it, I'd be wasting my time.
Hey, so what was it? But, you can't say you had an idea. What was it?
No, I wanted to shoot the show when it's going on, and they got two like recliners there, and there's two women there. And one of them said, I don't think they're that tough. No, I could whoop her. I could do this. I could do that. And then the next week, you know, you just see them from the back, and they're watching it. They're somewhere in a bar and they're watching the show. And they're still talking. She ain't nothing. And I wanted that to be ODB's like nieces. And she was going to bring them in. And she didn't like that idea. But I think it would have gotten over really, because I would have found two girls that could go a little bit and have ODB manage them. I think it would have worked.
Did you see her as a manager? Did you see her as a manager more than a wrestler, ODB?
At the time, I think she can do both. So I was just going to have her help these other girls get over, and then they could have a family feud, and she could go back to wrestling. I mean, don't put the cart in front of the horse. See where this leads you, and book it that way. Book it accordingly. I think it would have worked. And I had a name for them. What that name did I have? I can't think of it name, but
TBD. Two Dirty Bitches.
Two Dirty Bitches. TBD. That'd be good.
Next one. Dylan from Essex, UK. Hello, Dutch and James. I'm an avid listener of both of yours. Do you have any memories of the Killer Bees? I don't. Would you have ever come across Jumpin' Jim Brunzel?
No, but I came across Brian Blair quite a bit when he was breaking in, and I'd already been in the business like a year or two. And I got a couple pictures of me and Brian in the ring. Great worker, very good worker. And I still talk to him. He's in Florida here, so I still talk to him every now and then. He does like a wrestling club here, like Simran, like to what do they call the one in Vegas that meets out there?
Cauliflower or Alley.
Yeah, Cauliflower Alley. And they got one here, and I've been invited down there. I just never went down there. So, see, because when I get away from wrestling, you know, I just kind of stay away. I'll talk to people, but that was in my past. But he's invited me down there. Good guy. Really good guy.
Next question, Steve, Newcastle, England. There's a lot of people in England today. Hi, James and Dutch. I am a huge fan of the show. My question is, did Dutch ever come across Ed the Bull Gantner? And could he have gone on to become a main eventer in a major promotion had he not died so young? Best regards.
Well, who knows what life has for you? And the thing that people need to understand about wrestling, it's what kind of break you get or who gets behind you and pushes you. You know, I've seen a lot of guys that could have probably been as big as Randy Savage, I mean, in popularity, or anybody else, except they didn't get that right push or the right guys. Wrestling is very, very political. And see, some guys get the push, and some guys get the push and don't deserve the push. Like one guy who got the push, and the only reason he got the push was because of his body, and that's Ultimate Warrior. Ultimate Warrior couldn't work his way out of a paper bag, but that's not the issue. Vince pushed him because Vince he liked guys with great bodies. But you take Bobby Eaton, he didn't have a great body, but oh my God, what kind of match could he give you? But so Gantner, yeah. I'm not going to say one way or the other, but if he'd have got a certain endorsement from certain people, yes, he would have been a big star.
Now, I think he was mostly in Florida, and I think he may have died like around 1990. Did he make the rounds any territories that you happened to be in at the time?
No, I just heard the name, and I saw maybe a match or two of his. But I think again, we go back to endorsement and who gets behind him.
We'll do two or three, see how this one goes, and then we'll shut shop. Greg, hello, James. Could you please ask Dutch what he thinks about the Young Bucks flexing, giving it the old that? They don't have big arms or an impressive physique, so what are they trying to prove? And what about their theme song that has this lyric? This super kick is going to knock you out. Does Dutch think had a better super kick as a team, the Bucks or the Usos? Isn't time they found a new finisher? Okay, so first off, there's a bit to unpack there. The Young Bucks flexing.
Are they heels now?
I think they were against FTR, yeah.
Well, that's a heel move. And they can do it. I mean, that's their gimmick anyway. You know, they go out there and they're posing. It's like a slap you in the face. Hey, we don't have the body, but we can do the pose. And I think it's like a little, the ones that get it. And the ones that don't, hate them. But, and who has the better super kick? I think the Usos do, because I don't think the Usos they don't overdo it. I was watching a Young Bucks match. I bet they threw 10 or 12 super kicks. I mean, how many super kicks can you do before? And they don't knock anybody out with it. It's not like super kick, bam, oh, there's a finish, 1, 2, 3, yay. They saw it coming. Their matches, they're just super kick crazy. And where they learn, and they're good workers. They're from California, and they always had that indie streak in them. I guess they ran shows out there, and they did all that stuff. They actually, I think, did they train anywhere with anybody or taught themselves?
I'll have a look at that. You carry on.
So, but I think they're from Reseda, California or something. But they are what they are. And so when they do that pose, I kind of like to pose myself because I'm saying, look at those idiots. Mm-hmm. But they do get heat doing that because they get it with me. So I don't dislike them, but when they do that, you go, oh my God. When you see them, you say, I just hope they just walk by gym within the next week. So
it's funny. Now,
bodybuilding is not their strong suit.
You called it absolutely right, according to the Always Right Wikipedia. In 2001, the Massey family, their real surname, put a wrestling ring in their backyard where brothers Matt, Nick, and Malachi, apparently it's the third book, taught themselves how to wrestle by impersonating what they saw on television. So as Rick Rogers calls it, as seen on TV wrestling.
Well, if that's where they did it, they taught themselves pretty well. But you can learn all those moves, but yet when it comes down to a psychological match, somebody else has to put it together. I think, and I'm not saying they couldn't, but I don't see where anybody has become emotionally invested in the Bucks. And they have, and you could do it. They have the talent to do it, but I don't know. Down south, you run into a lot like that, except that they're not the level anywhere close to the level of the Young Bucks. But you see these independent guys that go and teach themselves, and they're just horrible. It's just they make a mockery of the business just by putting the ring up. So,
you know, when I was at All In Wembley, there was I hope I'm right in saying it was the book. Well, what does it matter? The Bucks and FTR, I think it was both Bucks, did a spike pile driver on whichever member of FTR it was, or vice versa, who knows. And I knew for a fact that it wouldn't even get a three count. I just knew, oh, it kicked out at two, and he rolls out the ring, and then they just do the next thing. It's like, how can we've got to a point in 2023 in wrestling where a spike pile driver means nothing?
I saw a match. Well, not one match. I've seen a bunch of matches. Kick out of just, I mean, powerful, crushing moves. Kick out. I expected the guy to say, screw it, turn around, pull out a damn 38 and shoot the guy. And he'd probably kick out of that too. But see, that's when it gets unbelievable. Even to people that don't have any doubt that it's real. They may think it's real, but after they kick out so many times, you're going, nah, it ain't happening. So, and that's what we got to watch again. Oh yeah, what they do is beautiful. It's some great stuff. But you know how I used to judge matches? An old-time booker told me one time, he says, when you book and you watch a match, watch it through the eyes of a 10 or 12-year-old kid. And they will tell you what they like just by watching them. Because they're at that phase, they don't know whether it is or it isn't. So if you watch them and see what they invest themselves in, you'll probably have a better chance of booking teams right than booking them wrong. I think sometimes wrestling, we get in this move. Oh, we got to do all these moves and we got to do this and we got to do that. No, if you told a coherent story and make it seem like a struggle, because Cody Rhodes is doing that right now and he's getting over with it. Roman Reigns does it. And the Usos do it. Those guys, you don't see that stuff in WWE. Because the agents and Vince himself, maybe not now, they would stop that stuff. Don't do that anymore. Because, and when Vince told you, you didn't do it anymore, because if you did it again, he'd just fire you. Because he'd give one warning, and if he's got to give another one, you're not listening the first time. So he'd let you go.
I've just looked out the window and realized it's dark. So I'm going to ask one more instead. And I know it's not dark where you are.
Oh, no, it's not here. It's very sunny and 80 degrees.
Oh, dear. It was warm here today, in fairness. But, man, that because, like, in the height of summer, it stays light till, like, 10, half 10 here. It's great. And now, the time is just the daylight is getting dark now.
Is it getting cool there now?
Today it was pretty warm, actually, but for the most part, yeah, it's just raining like crazy. But anyway, no one's interested about the weather that happened 4 days ago as when this podcast came out. I'll ask one more, and then I promise I will shut it down. Dale Groh, whose idea was it for Joe Ledoux to do the blood oath? What was the response like from the boys in the changing area? Thank you.
Oh, they went nuts. They went crazy.
Explain what the blood oath is.
Well, he went out there with an axe. Because he's from Canada, dressed like a lumberjack, and he's Joe Ledoux from Quebec, spoke French, and a really scary-looking guy. You know, if you ran across him on the street at night, you'd back up. If you saw him in a bar, I don't think anybody would want to tangle with him, because he literally looked like he could kill you and not have any second thoughts about it. And he went out there and he sharpened this axe, I know, for a day or two. And he went out there, and what he was trying to say during this interview, and I've never seen another interview like it ever, that he feels no pain. That's what he was saying. I don't feel any pain. And he took that axe on his arm and he cut his arm and blood dripping down from it. And Lance Russell going nuts. The audience going crazy because he's bleeding over there, but he feels no pain. So you're thinking, damn, he's pretty, if he don't feel any pain, he don't feel that, and that doesn't bother him. He's a tough son of a gun. And I've heard more about that interview, and I wasn't in Memphis when he did it, but I heard about it. When he got back, I think some of the guys were even afraid of him. You know, you hear about WWE, guys go back after having to do this thing, and hell, everybody ran to the corners. They got away from him because they were literally not afraid of him, but leery of him, because he wasn't a big talker. He wasn't really friendly. He'd just go do his business, have his match, and he'd leave. So, and I never knew that Joe Ledoux traveled with many guys. He probably did, but I never heard of anybody. And he didn't go out to bars that I heard of. So he was a enigma. You like that word? Mm-hmm. He was an enigma to the dressing room. He was a mystery. So, and he could have great matches with Lawler, but that was Lawler getting him over and then them going having a match. To Lawler, he drew a lot of money in Memphis, but he'd put them over first. He'd get them ready. And Jerry Jarrett, he's passed on now, but he gave probably the greatest summation of what wrestling is. It's like a kingdom, and you have a king, like King Lawler, and all of a sudden these fire-breathing dragons come in. And, you know, and then he would beat the underneath baby faces or the baby faces under Lawler, and he would look like a big challenge. Then they would send Lawler against him, and he would beat Lawler. Now he's, and him and Jimmy Hart, they're ruling everything now. And then they'd work it back around to Lawler would come back through a series of matches and tag team matches and gimmick matches. And then finally Lawler, when it got to the point of no return, he would win. And therefore, order was restored into the kingdom till the next fire-breathing dragon came in, who was already there and breathing fire as this top angle with Lawler and the first fire. I don't know if I'm clear enough on this, but it was a revolving door. And I could almost tell you in Memphis and most territories, say if they came in January and they were a top heel, they'd be needing to leave by September because they've done everything they've done. They've done everything they can do. Now, baby faces could stay. Heels had to keep cycling through. And that was the same strategy that a lot of territories use. They kept the resident baby face and ran the heels, or the fire-breathing dragons, as I call them. They run them through. And if you look at Florida, they had Dusty. And all those heels would go in and come out. Of course, they'd make money while they were there. Bruno in New York and Boston and in the Northeast, he was champion 8 years. And all they would do would look for that next big heel to come in and challenge him. And they did great business. It's like the Von Erichs in Texas. Same thing. Lawler in Memphis. Same thing. They kept the Mr. Wrestling, Tommy Rich, in Atlanta. And that's the way it worked. So if a heel came in Memphis, he had about a 9-month run before he would kind of get old. And he didn't have to move, but he should move because they would take him down to the middle of the card. Basically, they would take whatever heat he had, and it would dissolve itself if he ended up working with regular guys and not killing them. That makes sense?
Yeah. Absolutely, and what a story to end it on as well. Now I'm getting a tan. I'm getting a tan from this light. I've worked out that because of which side I'm looking at. Now I'm looking directly in the lights for 3 hours. So I think I've blinded myself. Anyway, having said that, so you know, if I'm fine where the keyboard is next week, I'll do another show with you. But for now, thank you very much, everybody, for watching. As we've said, we've got books and T-shirts coming out soon, and pro wrestling tees and franchise, University with Shane Douglas, YouTube, and blah, 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 you know, the whole thing.
How's that doing? Good?
Yeah, it's creeping up really, really well, actually. And we are recording another batch of shows this Sunday. Which, if there's one thing I can't stand, is working a Sunday. But you know what? I've got to do it, haven't I? Oh, never a day off, Dutch. Never a day off. But for now, thank you very much for watching, everybody. We'll catch you again on Friday. Email your questions at questionsfordutch@gmail.com. As I keep saying, we're getting like 50, 60, 70, 80 questions a week. So if yours doesn't get answered, hey, you're in good company. Most people's aren't. But for now, thank you very... and also, let me just say, keep trying. You know, if it's a good enough question, I will ask Dutch eventually. But for now, thank you very much for watching. We'll catch you again on Friday, and Dutch, we the people.
We the people.